Hello, you with Truth News Radio Australia. It's Wednesday, the 24th of June, 2009, and I am your host, Herewood Fenton, with Josh Jackson tonight for the whole show, and we are going to be dissecting, bisecting, trisecting, analysing, criticising, and hopefully not theorising, but in fact, resolving some of the questions that are paramount in our society at the moment. And we'll be leading with the Ozcar scandal, not because I actually think it's extremely important in itself, but because it is and has been dominating our news, and because it's actually being used in ways that I find quite go against the concept of law and democracy, I think it's actually worth analysing. So, without further ado, let's get on with the show. Welcome to the show again, Josh.
Good evening, Dr. Fenton.
Yes, I was about to play a little sting there, but I forgot to get my little sting buttons up in time, so we didn't get our little sting, unfortunately.
Oh, that would have been good. Anyway,
yeah.
As this show exceeds listenership every week, we're really getting inundated now with comments and emails, which is great. So keep that up, folks. I love hearing back from you. Mine 11 Oz is also a magnificent site for people to explore and find untold truths.
It is. It is extremely, extremely interesting. There you go. There was the little sting that I wanted to give you. Nice. Okay. So, on with the show. Okay, the Ozcar debate is our leading story for tonight.
Now, I think for the... For our international listeners, I think maybe you, I mean, you know a little bit more about this issue because I've been sort of focused on other stuff, but give us a bit of a roundup.
I totally agree. We need a background piece, and that is exactly what I have for you. I have it right here, and there was a background piece that was... compiled by Emma Rogers from the ABC. I'll just run through some of the key key points of this scandal that's kind of rocked Australian politics.
This extreme righteous condemnation of our leaders both on both parties. You know, this sort of extreme condemnation and feeling of righteousness when, you know, children are getting bombed.
Yeah.
You know, don't worry about that. Let's talk about the, you know, these ridiculous Ute scam. I mean, I think it's important to pull politicians up on any corruption, which so it's good, but it's sort of weird to see this, you know, why this blows out. Anyway, well, yeah, I think, give us the roundup.
Yeah. And I think you're quite right to point out that for those who live in other countries, they may not even be aware of it. Although it has been reported on the BBC, but you know, probably it's not, you know, going to be something that many people around the world are going to be really overly concerned about. So let's give you a bit of background here. In Australia, I mean, for those of you listening who are not in our country, we have two main parties, as is so common in our so-called democracies around the world. We have basically a two-party system.
Two-party dictatorship.
Yeah. We also have a couple of minor parties, you know, but and they often are sort of what do they call them? Decider or decision-making. They often sort of, you know, the vote that the minor parties give, that the marginal parties give, can actually swing things one way or another, you know. Okay. And our main minor party these days, actually, believe it or not, is the Greens. It used to be other parties, but the Greens have actually become our main minor party, which is an interesting development. So we have currently a what would normally be called a left wing or left leaning government, the Labour Party, which has traditionally been the Workers' Party of Australia. And they are counted by the Conservative Liberal Party. For those Americans out there, in Australia, the word liberal has a little different meaning to your usage of the word liberal. We talk about small L liberals and large L liberals. A large L liberal is actually a conservative. It's funny, isn't it? Okay. So,
yes, they call us the land down under.
Yeah, and for good reason.
Backwards. Yeah, even our toilets go backwards when you flush them. And
yeah, everything goes the wrong way. Everything goes. I mean, we walk upside down too. Yeah. And you know, when we peel a banana, we peel it from right to left.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Anyway, getting on to these serious, weighty matters of state. There is a man, Prime Minister, our Prime Minister. His name is Kevin Rudd, and there is a leader of the opposition, and his name is Malcolm Turnbull. And there are various other sort of smaller players, cameo players, you know, medium characters in this little drama known as the Auscar or Utegate scandal.
That's in reference to the American Watergate.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
This had a car dealership that sells what we Aussies here called utes, which are tray top cars.
Indeed. And the center of the nexus of this whole scandal, furore, debacle, whatever you want to call it, is that Kevin Rudd, our fearless Prime Minister, has been accused of misleading Parliament. Now,
it's never happened in the history of the world.
yeah,
it's very new.
It's an amazing, incredible development. Okay, so let's get down to the nitty gritty. When Mr. Rudd was asked by the opposition in Parliament on June 4 whether his office made references to those administering a scheme known as Auscar on behalf of his friend, Mr. Grant, and we'll explain both of those in a minute, Mr. Rudd replied, "I have been advised that neither I nor my office have ever spoken with Mr. Grant in relation to Auscar. Neither myself nor my office have ever made any representations on his behalf. I have not been aware of any representations on his behalf, and I have not been aware of any representations made by anyone in government." Okay, so who is Mr. Grant and what is Auscar? Okay, Auscar is a $2 billion trust, sometimes referred to as SPV, or Special Purposes Vehicle, announced by the government late last year in response to the fact that two companies that provide credit to car dealerships withdrew their services. The trust was formed in January, but has not yet provided any company with credit, and the legislation for the trust has not passed the Senate. Now, to just flesh that out a bit more, as I understand it, what Auscar is it's part of the overall stimulus package. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's correct, isn't it, Josh? It's part of the stimulus package, the emergency injection of money that the government was involved in at the end of last year because of the economic crash. Okay, and similar things have happened in other countries.
There was developments before. I mean, from what I heard, though, there was something to do with one of these car dealerships during the election.
Okay,
where they lent cars to Kevin Rudd to like utes. which are utility vehicles, to these tray top vehicles, to put like signage and all, you know, vote Kevin Rudd won and all this science
into
well, the
utes. This brings us to John Grant, because John Grant is a friend and Brisbane neighbour of Kevin Rudd, and he's also well known to Treasurer Wayne Swan. Mr. Grant owns a car dealership in Ipswich, Queensland, and he donated a free ute to Mr. Rudd that the Prime Minister uses in his electorate as a mobile office.
Now, there's nothing free in the world, folks.
Absolutely.
In politics.
Absolutely. Okay, so the claim... Now, a claim was made that the Prime Minister was helping his mate, and he denied the claim. Okay. Now, later on, it emerged that the claim that the Prime Minister had been assisting his mate had actually involved an email which was sent. And this is where I have to actually start to deviate from the way this story has been officially covered. And this is as a result of my research, which I've done over the past 2 days.
Mm.
But what I can tell you, and you will not find this easily if you start trying to research this story. It took me quite a while to drill in to find this. But,
oh, look, the amount of information, and you know, it's a sea. I mean, everyone's jumped in on this. Everyone, and it's really hard to even tell what's going on.
It is indeed a sea. Okay, a couple of the minor players, and one of them has never even emerged to tell his tale, that we must now explain to you, is this man by the name of Godwin Gretsch.
That's a great name, isn't it?
theatrical sort of screen name. He is a Treasury official in charge of formulating and administering the Oscar scheme, believe it or not.
Mm.
He is also accused of being a mole for the Liberal Party, and he has been accused also of lying and is currently under investigation, or at least under suspicion, of criminal activities by the Australian Federal Police. However, he works in the Treasury, you know, although he's not a government party person, he's more a public service person, okay? So, and he was questioned by the Federal Police over the last few days over a fake email. Well, I'll deconstruct this word fake email shortly, which was sent to his home email address. Now, there is another man who I consider to be very, very interesting in this whole saga. His name is Andrew Charlton. Andrew Charlton is Mr. Rudd's economic advisor. The opposition had alleged that he wrote the email at the centre of the scandal, which was later found to be fake, and he is also the person opposition leader Malcolm Turnbull is accused of allegedly menacing at the midwinter ball, when Mr. Turnbull said, "You know and I know that there is documentary evidence that you have lied." Okay, so let's just zoom in on Andrew Charlton and the so-called fake email. You're probably wanting to know, what was this email? That would be my question at this point, if I were listening to this story. What was the darn email? Okay, well, I'm going to now read to you everything that the public knows about that email. And that information comes to us courtesy of News Limited. I'm just trying to move my browser window here and having a little trouble, as I often do. Okay. Yes. Okay, so we're looking at an article that I have put here. Labour, where is it? Mount Rogers. Looks like I've lost it. Okay. I appear to have lost the article. Ah, this could be it. Steve Lewis. Yes, this is the man. And remember that name. Steve Lewis is the journalist who to whom we owe the knowledge, or allegation, I should say, that an email was written. And he's the man who actually broke the main part of the story, and that was only late last week. This was published June 20th.
Mm.
And it was published, I believe, in the Adelaide Now, and then it was republished in the Daily Telegraph, and then it went on to allthenews.com.au syndicated sites. Because our entire country really basically is news.com.au. I mean, the entire media is actually affiliated with news.com.au, another interesting fact. Okay. So, in this article, Steve Lewis says, Malcolm Turnbull claims that PM Kevin Rudd and Treasurer Wayne Swan must resign if they cannot justify alleged preferential treatment for one of the PM's mates. The Rudd government was in crisis last night amid calls for Prime Minister Kevin Rudd and Treasurer Wayne Swan to resign over allegations they misled federal parliament. An explosive email, which has been read to the Advertiser, reveals the Prime Minister asked if a $2 billion scheme could be made available to help his friend, Queensland car dealer John Grant. It was also revealed key correspondence updating the government over Mr. Grant's dealership woes was sent directly to Mr. Swan's home office. Mr. Swan is the treasurer, the second most sort of significant person in government. As the government reeled under its biggest crisis since being elected, Liberal leader Malcolm Turnbull accused the PM and treasurer of using their offices to seek advantage for one of their mates. The Advertiser can reveal Mr. Rudd's senior economics advisor, Andrew Charlton, wrote an email in February to the Treasury official in charge of the Auscar scheme, Godwin Gretsch. So pay attention to the wording here. It says, the Advertiser can reveal. Now, they're not really, they're not...
they're the Advertiser's being, a newspaper, folks.
Yeah, this is actually where it was published, okay? That's the paper that it was published in. Adelaide Now Advertiser, something like that, okay? The Advertiser. Okay, so this journalist is basically claiming godlike knowledge, okay? And he's now going to reveal some information. And here's the email sent by Andrew Charlton. Hi, Godwin. The PM has asked if the car dealer financing vehicle is available to assist a Queensland dealership, John Grant Motors, who seems to be having trouble getting finance. If you can follow up on this ASAP, that would be very useful. Happy to discuss. The government last night, and this was written last week, I said this is old news now.
Mm.
The government last night maintained it was unable to locate the email, but Mr. Gretsch, appearing before a Senate hearing, contradicted the Prime Minister's claims. And this is last Friday, he said, my recollection is that there is a short email from the PMO, that's the Prime Minister's office, to me, Mr. Gretsch told the Senate hearing.
Okay. Look, I reckon we need to sort of, condense this a bit.
Yeah.
Because you could go on forever.
It's getting a bit ridiculous. Okay. There's some background. Okay. Now I'll fast forward. Okay. I'll tell you what happened in relatively quick order. Okay.
Yeah.
After these electrifying statements that were made in the Parliament last week, the Prime Minister went into panic control mode, okay? And he actually got the Australian Federal Police. First of all, he claimed that this email constituted some sort of crime, okay? The actual crime that email constituted has never been properly explained to the Australian people, because a claim was made, an email was sent, and then a claim was made that it wasn't sent. I don't see a crime yet, okay? I don't see a crime. But the allegation was that this is actually a crime, therefore we're going to get the AFP involved, the Australian Federal Police, which they did. And the AFP raided Mr. Godwin Gwecha's home.
My God.
And as a result of their raid, which I think was done, I think that was done on Monday. So the Prime Minister engaged a police investigation on Saturday. On Monday morning, they raided his home and declared, well, this is the way it was announced in the newspapers, that the email was a fake. Okay, it was a fake email, right?
So what does that mean, a fake email?
Well, yes, very good
question.
Did
someone write that and just send it off and pretend like you can't? Email's got an ending to it, you know, it comes from someone. Emails can't be faked, you know.
Yeah, it's exactly, I'm so glad you said that. And this is what is most disturbing, it's what disturbs me about the way this story is going, is that this now is being forgotten, and it's a double twist, it's a double think, double speak. We're told, oh, it was a fake email, everyone forgets about it, okay. And the first thing the AFP does is they go and raid the home of a man who really is just a government official, okay? And he's just made a statement. He's already made a statement, which is something that's legally binding. So it's an extreme reaction to send the federal police in to raid his home. Because the government...
Well, it's not like there's even a court that has demanded this sort of thing.
Well, no, it appears that the Prime Minister's office is acting as in a totalitarian manner here. That's the way it comes across to me. Although that's
exactly right. I mean, I'm all for them doing that to each other, these politicians. Not really. You know, I say that in jest. Like, you have to go through procedures in this sort of society, in this sort of statist society. You have to go to the courts and ask for some sort of, or to the chief of police and ask for some sort of warrant. You can't just take the law into your own hands and demand the federal police go searching and seizing whatever they want. And
well, unfortunately, they did. See, they unfortunately for our values, they have engaged. They did get the Attorney General to issue a warrant, but it was all done in a rush. It was done in a panic, you know. The Attorney General announced an investigation and a warrant was issued. They also announced the Auditor General was going to do an investigation, but the Auditor General is a very long process. It takes months, so there's not going to be any feedback from that, and that's got to follow certain procedures. But the Australian Federal Police sort of now charging in, it seems that has just overridden everything, and there's no understanding of due process anymore. We don't know what the Auditor General is going to find. But let's just get back to this fake email, right? Because the email is not fake. Even though it's been put on all the newspapers and in all the main stories, it's described as a fake email. The email is real, and it's been confirmed by the police that it is a real email, okay? It is, if anything, it may be a forged email, okay? Big difference.
What,
here.
So someone jumped on someone else's computer, wrote something.
Well,
logged off.
What I can confirm to you from my reading of the AFP, and I had to read a number of articles to find this, is that the AFP have confirmed that the email was sent from within the Treasury Department to Mr. Godwin Gwecha. But you will read in all of the newspapers and all the media that it was a fake email. However, it was a real email, and it was really sent from a government department to Mr. Gwecha. The point in question here, which no media outlet is even addressing, is Mr. Andrew Charlton, who was claimed to be the one who wrote the email. No one has questioned him. The federal police have not investigated him. His home hasn't been raided. Only the government official, Godwin Gwecha. Andrew Charlton is Kevin Rudd's economic advisor. I don't even know what that means, but he sits in Parliament. And
well,
I have not had enough...
advisors are usually sort of half almost they're not public servants, but they're private public kind of, you know, and they advise political figures, and they're meant to be apolitical,
and they're often privately funded.
Mm.
Now, I have searched far and wide. I've done hours of Googling to try and find any indication from anyone as to what Mr. Andrew Charlton has to say on this. Nothing. There is nothing. And there is not one single quote of him either confirming or denying that he wrote the email.
Mm.
And there has been no attempt to question him either by the media or by the federal police. It's as if he is completely immune to all forms of investigation, whereas this government official is now under investigation by the police. And yet we know the email was sent. We know that a claim was made in several major Australian newspapers that the man who wrote it, and it was asserted extremely confidently, that the man who wrote it was Mr. Rudd's economic advisor. And that whole side to the story is thrown out.
So he wrote an email saying
the PM, you know, I'm writing to you on behalf of the PM.
Mm-hmm.
Can we, you know, chase up this business of helping this guy get the money? Okay.
Mm.
Now, why would everyone be pointing the finger at Gretsch and no one even talking about the guy who supposedly wrote the email? Here's my suggestion to you, is that he's not saying anything because anything he says could be used against him, right?
Mm.
Which doesn't mean to me he looks very innocent. It doesn't suggest that he looks innocent. If someone is innocent, they don't generally avoid making statements. This man has completely avoided any statement, and people are only making statements about him in the government because I guess anything he says could, if it turned out to be a lie, he would be criminally liable. If he said, no, I didn't send the email, he could go to prison. But he hasn't had to say anything. They've carefully avoided questioning him. So he may well have not written the email. We'll never know because he was never asked. And this is now we're getting into the point of why we're covering this on Truth News, is this is a complete trick. This is my analysis. This is part of the subversion of democracy that we've seen over and over again. We saw it all through the Howard government. We're seeing it in a slightly more, I don't know, it's different. It's worse.
So in what way? I don't quite follow you.
We're seeing cronyism from within the government, the government's own minders and people being totally protected from investigation, and patsies being thrown to the wolves for the media.
Yeah, well, that's right. It's sort of trial by media because what I watch, I turned on Sky News the other night and it was basically a court trial without the court. It was using, you know, question time, which for the Americans is the time where politicians all yell at each other across the table and try to, you know, outsmart each other. And using all of question time just to basically have this mock trial. And it's ridiculous because none of it really matters because it's not a true court. Nothing stands up. It's all sort of just for show.
Yeah, and there's a thing called parliamentary privilege. Yeah.
Mm.
Just getting back to this question of the email, because it all does hinge on this email. A couple of points I want to make, because I work with IT systems, okay? It's not that easy to say who wrote an email, okay? You just can't. You can't just march in with, you know, apparently the AFP has computer forensic professionals who work for them. Of course they do. Mm. And apparently they brought them to Godwin Gretsch's home, marched in, looked at his computer and said, it's a fake email. Okay. This would normally be the subject of, you'd have witnesses for the prosecution and the defense if it were a real criminal case. And they'd have their own forensic people. The defense would have their forensic people. And it's quite difficult because you can't easily ascertain who wrote an email simply by looking at the computer. You can ascertain certain information, which doesn't... Okay, you made, for example...
Well, you're left open to also someone planting something, you know. I mean, it really isn't very thorough, that's for sure.
Well, in this case, an email was definitely sent from the Treasury Department to the computer in his home. And the AFP are saying, well, it's a forged email. Well, hang on. The claim was made that a man by the name of Andrew Charlton sent an email, okay?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. The question of forgery is irrelevant because that man, Andrew Charlton, has to be questioned and has to actually say on oath, or at least in Parliament, whether he did or did not send the email. That's the first thing you do. Because if he answers no,
yeah,
then you go and take it to the next step. But he has to make a statement. This is ridiculous. You can't just use the police as judge, jury, and executioner to push to enforce what the government wants you to believe is the truth.
Oh, you can in the New World Order. You sure can. You know, this is the new world, folks, where the politicians can just get rid of courts and have the police be the judge.
Now, look, we'll have notes to this entire story on the site. I want to just skip forward now to the reason why this is important. My analysis, okay? I may be wrong. I think what they're trying to do is the government is being blocked. The government is really blocked at the moment with emissions trading scheme.
The emissions trading scheme, folks, is not going very well because it's being blocked by a few people, including the opposition, which is the Liberal Party, and Family First.
Yeah. Malcolm Turnbull, although he's not totally against it, is not going to allow them to push it through in the form they want it.
Yeah, they got to pretend, you know. They got to do a little bit of a hustle and a bustle to say, you know, we're not for this.
And what my analysis of the entire global situation suggests is that this emissions trading scheme is part of the bigger picture that we're seeing of the global system now, the web, the network, the grid, the control grid of the global control system now clamping down. And it has to clamp down globally in every country. And they're impatient. They don't want to wait. They're very impatient. And it's not about Kevin Rudd. But this economic advisor of his, these are the type of people. You know, there are these people in the background with connections to the globalist elite who are absolutely determined to clamp down now, to extract, to globalize, to begin to tax us as a stage one in creating the new system.
Absolutely. You know, you hit on a very vital point. So what you're saying now, Harold, is that you think that this is basically a way to force the opposition, because what's happened now is this is basically the opposition, who is not in power, just to give you a quick roundup, the opposition that's not in power basically sent a so-called, you know, set up the this is what the accusation is, that they set up the prime minister to say that he was acting corruptly. This has now been thrown back into their faces and said, hey, you made this up, this is fake, and now do what we want.
Yeah, I mean, this.
Otherwise,
it's really...
we will expose you further. We will make you leave. You know, we're threatening your jobs now.
The leader
of the opposition is being asked to resign and all sorts. So now the leader of the opposition, all of a sudden, and this, correct me if I'm wrong, this is what you're saying, is that he is now having to play ball with issues like certain taxes and this global carbon trading scheme.
Exactly. And it can't be underestimated, the seriousness of what's happening here. And it's more extreme than anything that has ever happened in my memory, because the leader of the opposition is now being roped into the criminal investigation. And I mean, this is the sort of thing that will totally destroy people's career and possibly lead to people going to prison. Okay, it's not trivial, even though it may seem like a joke and a circus. People could go to prison over this. Malcolm Turnbull could potentially go to prison over this. That's how serious it is. That has not happened in my lifetime. Even with all of the excesses and all of the twisting of justice that we saw with the Howard regime, this is a new fever pitch here, a new pitch of bullying, of brutal political machinations. I do think that you've got to see it and you've got to understand, and when we see the crisis that's brewing with the government wishing to push through these major changes to our system with the emissions trading scheme, which again can't be underestimated, like can't be overestimated. Sorry, the emissions trading scheme is a huge change to the way we do everything. There's nothing like that in our history. Okay, so we are going through a transformation, and the Rudd Labor government is pushing us through that.
That's right. You know, we're getting hammered left, right, and center with false science and all sorts of really ridiculous assertions. You know, there's no science. It's just all scientists say it's true. All technical experts said that Y2K bug was going to happen, you know, as well. Did it? No. I mean, you know, it's this sort of that's what's happening. So we're getting this sort of fake rubbish thrown at us all the time, and for that, we're now getting forced into an emissions trading scheme. Well, you know, to give the Liberal Party some sort of credit, they have been sort of against it. Generally for a long time, and I'm not sure whether that's because of globalist bickering of who should control, because there was this whole Kyoto fiasco and America, I think, wanted to hold off until they had control of the global carbon trading scheme or you know, who had actual control of the mechanism instead of Kyoto or the Asian sector of the world. I think that's really what was going on in the Liberal Party and why they were holding off on this emissions trading scheme, because they love nothing more than to tax people. Don't get me wrong. They have been holding off for whatever reason, and now it looks like through this whole fiasco, they are using this email, which people will go to prison to, like Harold said, if they're found to be true. And so this threat of we'll keep pushing this from the Labor Party, we'll keep pushing this if you don't just, open the gate and let, you know, Alcopops tax through, let the emissions trading tax through. If you don't play ball, we'll expose you.
And just to give you an idea of how this is affecting the ongoing, policy, Mr. Turnbull, this is from yesterday, Mr. Turnbull has already been forced to concede his attack on the Prime Minister, could not be sustained. And then it says that he will not, Mr. Turnbull's authority was weakened when four coalition MPs crossed the floor to oppose the Alcopops tax increase. So this has happened as the leader of the opposition is being weakened in this situation. His people are crossing the floor. Okay.
So that folks means that the opposition to the government basically have joined the government on this issue or something like that. Is that correct?
Yeah. His own people have crossed the floor to oppose. And look, the Alcopops tax is the most ridiculous, egregious, and, just stupid tax I think we've ever had, wouldn't you? I mean, we've had so many new taxes. It's just goes on.
Oh, look,
on and
any tax in my mind is a ridiculous tax. I mean, I'd rather not get taxed at all and be the master of my own money. You know, if someone wants to support the troops in Afghanistan, they can write a check to the military department, no problem.
Well, look, I'm not going to go all the way with you on that. I can accept in principle that a tax that we all paid some money to help, like, maintain the roads, you know, if it really was done in that way and it worked, I can see there's a reason for it. But you know what I mean? Like, I can see the logic for it, even if it may be corrupted or whatever. Mm. But with these taxes, like tax on tobacco and the taxes on alcopops, well, okay, the tax on tobacco is supposedly because people are harming themselves by smoking, we're going to tax them more, and then we're going to use that tax money to treat the people with the illnesses. I don't know. That logic just seems to me totally ridiculous. I just... You know,
that's absolutely absurd. It's absolutely absurd. See, in this private sector, you just say, look, you're a smoker, so the insurance companies are going to charge you a hell of a lot more insurance for health insurance. Yeah. Boom, job done. Everyone quits smoking. And if they don't, then their health insurance goes up. I mean, they've got themselves to blame. They've got their own responsibility.
Now, I'm not sure what this Alcopops tax is actually going towards. Do you even know? Like, I don't even know.
Look, it's ridiculous to say that any tax goes towards this. It doesn't. It goes to a big pool and it all gets spent on whatever they want. This ridiculous notion that, crossing the bridge and paying a toll every day to the government for this goes actually to the roads over here. And,
look, I think we should just...
An alcohol tax goes to helping families of alcoholism and stuff like that. It's absolutely absurd.
We just need to explain what the Alcopops tax is, though. It's not actually an alcohol tax. We already have an alcohol tax. The Alcopops tax is a new tax, and they only brought it in last year, okay? And it's a tax on a certain type of drink. These are soft drinks that have alcohol in them.
Yeah, I mean, we have wines and beers and all sorts, but the kids, folks, the kids... They go out because everything's banned to them, ecstasy and marijuana and all the rest. So they go out and they get absolutely blasted on these alcoholic pop drinks. You know,
these drinks were quite popular with young women, and young women often like sweet drinks, and Bacardi Breezer, stuff like that.
That's right.
And it's just the sort of thing that young women typically drink for some reason. Okay, it's historical. I mean, women have always been slightly inclined to the sweeter side, and that's why they like these sweetened drinks. Now, if you go to a bar, you can order a rum and coke, or you can get a pre-mixed rum and coke.
But also teenagers, as you can all remember, folks, when you first started, growing a few hairs down there and your voice popping in and out of deepness, you wanted to, go out there and be a bit rebellious and start drinking. But when you drank, tasted beer, it tasted awful, right? I mean, when you first drink beer, it tastes awful. So what do the kids go for? They go for lolly water that has alcohol instead, and they down these things like there's no tomorrow. And
so the government's solution, tax them.
Tax them. And that's their solution for everything. You know, that's their solution. Either tax them or fine them, and which is basically the same thing. It's a monetary way of discouraging a behavior, and it just doesn't work. I mean, they just end up, what happens is you offset it to more dangerous things. So instead of people drinking Alcopops, they'll eventually go and drink methylated spirits, because the fact of the matter is they want to lose their inhibitions because they're teenagers. They've got a lot of inhibitions, and they want to socialize. They want to meet girls. They want to, party on. And when and you know, alcohol is a great social lubricant, as we all know, and so these kids need them. So instead of, you know, proper education on the extremes of alcoholism and the dangers on your liver and kidney, which, you know, it's probably only got so much value because kids think they're invincible, but, you know, instead they just tax them. And it's ridiculous, you know, I mean...
And that's what we're seeing now is that apparently on the wake of this scandal now, that tax is going through. But other things that are also bundled up with that, and this is a statement from the Prime Minister, not only has the integrity of the opposition leader been fundamentally shattered by this forged email affair, his authority within the Liberal Party has been destroyed, Mr. Rudd said. Three major matters before this Parliament, on the carbon pollution reduction scheme, on Alcopops, and on immigration policy, he cannot even unite his party. So these issues are scooped together now. Of course, the emissions trading carbon pollution is much bigger, okay? It's a huge thing. And that's really what I guess we're leading to, because this is what we're talking about it for, because that's a fundamental change to our system. And I think that they may well be playing dirty tricks to help them get there. Anyway, look, shall we move on? I'm going to just take us into a short pause promo.
When you're sick of the propaganda, when you're over the disinformation, when you can't stand the deception, when the deceit gets too much, when the spin becomes transparent, you know where to turn. You turn on truthnews.com.au with your hosts, Harold Fenton and Joshua Jackson.
Ah, that's better.
Now, one thing I wanted to talk about was that the ever-encroaching Stasi mentality that is happening here in Australia. Ministerium für Stadtsicherheit, which is the Ministry of State Protection. Now, security, I should say, state security. That's the Stasi of East Germany, which is, for the folks that don't know, basically it was a fascinating. In fact, there's a great film called The Lives of Others. It really portrays a great deal of what went on there. And basically, what the government did over there is they basically got everyone to spy on everyone and got everyone real paranoid about everyone else. And you know, the only thing that they did different is they actually employed up to, you know, 274,000 persons to spy on other people. And not only that, they had another 200,000 people that were called inofficial. Mitarbeiter, which are like unofficial workers that were just obsessed with the state, you know, and more and more we're seeing this really incredibly scary lifestyle change, this sort of this thing of dobbing each other in for any sort of thing. Now,
but Josh. It's not called dobbing anymore. It's called phoning in, and you know that's so much better because dobbing is un-Australian, but the word phone in is actually totally okay.
Very Australian.
Did you know that?
Well, it's very very Australian to phone in. Yep.
Yeah.
I'm being sarcastic, but what's happening and why we're talking about this is basically in Western Australia, a big campaign is about to launch or has launched, where you dob in a bikie or phone in a bikie, is the official thingamajig. And basically, what you should, if you know of anyone or you think you know of someone that is part of a bikie group, you can phone the special phone number where you are asked to tell everything about this person, where they go to the pub, which pub they go to, who their girlfriend is, how often they go to the pub, how often they hang out at certain areas, what sort of motorbike they've got, what sort of hair color, really detail these people, go, and what we're, this all started, I know when I was a little bit younger, they started this with marijuana smokers, dobbing a marijuana smoker, down in Adelaide, or I remember that,
How is the
and
average person supposed to know whether someone is a bikie, and how do you even define what a bikie is? Again, as the language has been twisted around, because you can't define a bikie, there is no definition. It's a word that has only connotations of meaning.
oh, it's a hairy guy that rides a motorbike,
So anyone who's got like hair and rides a motorbike has to be dobbed in because they're a criminal. Is that?
Well, exactly. I mean, it's sick, folks. This is the sick downfall of a free society. A free society doesn't go around getting paranoid of certain minority groups like the Muslims, the bikies, the pot smokers, the and we had this massive push from the old government, the old Liberal government of, and we've still got it, to be honest. This is the same. This is what we talk about when we're talking about the ridiculous notion that we're in a democracy or in a free society. We had the Liberal government where these ads came on, if you see anything suspicious, anything, and they'd show these pictures of like a fence that's slightly cut and a bin with a folder, a manila folder with some papers in it, these ridiculous photos. If you see anything suspicious, ring the national security hotline, and that government got voted out, and the Rudd government's been in for a year now, and we still have those ads. Nothing's changed, folks. We still have those ads. And
Correct.
so to think that any sort of change in government changes anything is absolutely absurd. And but anyway, what we're seeing now is from this sort of dob in a terrorist, and this is what we call about incrementalism. Dob in a terrorist. Oh, that sounds reasonable. If you see someone with, if you hear about, someone's making a bomb. Well, I guess it's the post 9/11 world and this and that, and I better tear them.
Yeah, how often do you hear about someone making a bomb, eh?
I mean, it's absolutely absurd, that they've got to show this on television. It's nothing to do with anything but fear. Now, the other thing that does is totally, this whole Dobbin thing is totally counterproductive, I should say. Because what happens is all you get is more noise. More noise of the paranoia in the system. You get all these little tail,
Look, you know what it is,
dobbers who see
Josh?
some ridiculous thing and I saw this hole in the fence and ooh, he's got a hairy face and but this is the incrementalism.
This
First
is
it's
the this is the this what you're hearing is the sound of the slamming shut of the prison gate that you are about to be locked in to by.
absolutely. This is the sound. Do you know anyone that speeds? It speeds in their car. It's not enough to have their own cameras anymore. Do you know, dob in a speeder, dob in a, anything that's any law, dob him in. And this is the incremental way it works, folks. First it's dob in a terrorist. Now it's dob in a bikie. Well, I guess that's reasonable. Yeah, I mean they do have, drug rings and gun trading, and they do steal cars and rebirth them and motorbike. It's all
And
ridiculous.
we get the kids to do it. This is a typical standard feature of what happens. You get the kids to do it. The kids will start dobbing in on their parents. And this is happening. I've been told by parents who have children who are getting indoctrinated with climate change dogma, that they come home and their little child is being a tyrant, and telling them to turn the washing machine off and turn the taps off and turn the heaters off, because it's all, you know, they've been indoctrinated. The kids have been pumped with all of this fear-based dogma, and then empowered to act like little Stasi, you know, little Nazis marching around ordering their parents to do things. And of course, the next step is getting kids to dom on their parents, which will happen as well. It's happening in other countries.
Oh, absolutely. And they're openly doing it. I mean, you know, once this tax comes in, all of a sudden you're a tax evader if you're not, if you haven't paid your carbon credits, but you're using some sort of function that needs carbon credits, or your child dobs them in at school, you know, and you the kid gets a little smiley, you know, a scratch and sniff sticker if they dob their parents in this week, you know.
And children are so susceptible to this type of thing. I mean, you've got to.
Well,
go
they don't
back.
Know history. They you've don't know history. Yet. They're just told what to do, and they'll do it because they'll get a little, you know, a little. A bunch of smarties, a pack of smarties, or a smiley sticker, or you know, they don't know any better. You know, that's why I find it so ridiculous when the news goes, they're bringing in this new climate change tax or something like that, and they'll go and interview some little child. What do you think? And the kid will go, I think it's really good. You know, as if he or she knows anything about history. And I'm not saying that young people are dumb. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that there's just not enough capacity to truly understand the scope of what's happening.
Yeah.
And to show this cute little face of a 9-year-old saying something, having an opinion about something that's very that's extremely takes a lot of intellectual insight and knowledge of systems and society and history. Anyway, we're sort of diverting, but the Stasi state is really growing up around us, and like you said, Herod, the children will be next to dob, you know, dob in, and it won't be dob, no, because that's un-Australian. It's phone in, like there's any difference.
Yeah, as if there's any difference at all. And look, you've got to understand that historically we've seen how children can be inducted into forms of totalitarian brutality. It's happened in war situations many times. Of course, the famous example is Nazi Germany. A whole generation of kids were turned into kind of robotic armies for Hitler's genocidal, suicidal plans. And we really have to be awake, and we're not. We're just not awake to it. We've got to see the signs from the past and then take proactive action to prevent that from occurring.
Mm.
Look, I think it's time for a bit of music. Can you just keep chatting there for a minute?
I was watching Rage the other night and come across some, you know, there was some good stuff being played, and some of the mainstream stuff, Lily Allen really is coming across some good stuff.
We've just got some music here by Tracy Chapman.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown. Accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are changing. Come writers than critics. You prophesize with your pen. And keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin. And there's no telling who that it's naming. And the loser now will be later to win. For the times, they are changing. Come senators and congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorways, don't block up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. There's a battle outside and it's raging. It'll soon shake your windows and rattle your walls. For the times, they are a-changing. Come mothers and fathers throughout the land. Don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your old road is rapidly aging. Please get out on the new one if you can lend your hand. For the times, they are changing. The line it is drawn, the curse it is cast. The slow one now will later be fast. As a present now will later be past. Your old road is rapidly fading, and the first one now will later be last. For the times, they are changing.
Propaganda, disinformation, misinformation, deception, deceit, spin, untruths, half-truths, lies. You know the truth. Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au.
Okay, welcome back.
Wow, that's one creepy promo.
yeah, it certainly is, isn't it? Yeah, it's certainly, that'll scare off a few people, but we only want the tough info soldiers, you know. That's what we filter for, okay. So, Josh, yeah. you're going to kick off this section with a movie review. Let me just... introduce it with some spooky music. I'll just
Yes, well, we're going to talk about Transformers. I was lucky enough to get a preview screening of the new Revenge of the Fallen Transformers. I was a great fan of the cartoon as a child. And, so went along and had a bit of a look. So, I just basically I want to talk about the but that music is like sort of fades in and out as I talk. It's really hard to focus.
Sorry about that. I was trying to fade it out slowly. The problem is
because
that...
my headset sort of dims it as I talk and then brings it back up.
We actually need a. I'd like to get for this show. A proper mixer with big slider knobs on it, so
I could fade
out slowly. Yeah,
we need equipment, and if we would love your donations, you know, we really we run on a total smell of an oily rag here.
It's barely a sniff. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Barely it's a whiff.
So, you know, we would really love it if anyone, even $5, you know, would help us out a lot. And
and we're going to make it easy for you to do that. We're going to put a chip in donation option on the main page very soon.
Of truthnews.com.au. So yeah, please, yeah. You know, we're not like some bigger studios that can just afford any equipment. So every little dollar we really make it go a long way. We don't just buy up, you know, antique furniture from Italy to sit on. We really do. You know, we're not one of those dot-commers.
Well, there is my cuckoo clock.
Oh, yeah. So,
I do collect cuckoo clocks, you must understand.
Your donations really help us to keep this show on the air or on the wire as it is.
Pumping out
truth, yeah. And
mainlining and, truth straight into your veins.
Yeah, yeah. What I wanted to talk about is Transformers. Now, as I was saying, you know, I was a big fan when I was a kid, and I was quite excited to see the new one, as I am I've been in the special effects industry for a very long time.
Can you, for a person who's completely ignorant like me, I don't even know what Transformers is.
Right. Well, you know, it was a cartoon in the mid 80s, and it's basically a bunch of robots, like cars and things, that transform into robots. So cars drive along, and they go choo-choo-choo-choo, and turn into these robots that, and there's the baddies, which are called the Decepticons. Because they deceive, and they con, and then so you have the Decepticons on one side, and then you have the what are the other team called? The Decepticons and it slipped me now, but yeah. You have the goodies and the baddies, and the goodies are there to protect humanity from the baddies, and they're an alien race, but they're totally robotic. But what I found with this movie, and I know it's aimed at the 17-year-olds, but it reminded me a lot of, you know, the blaxploitation films.
Okay.
Where they would use this sort of this sort of exploitation of black people. It was actually before the blaxploitation films, but it was this sort of, you know, every sort of black person was this sort of, you know, boot polished faced white person in this smile. Now, what I'm referring to here is it's sexploitation.
Okay.
It's the exploitation of women in this film. Women in this film are basically just objects. There's not one plump woman in this film. There's not one normal-looking human being. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm all for looking at beautiful women. I mean, God bless them. You know,
good on you.
Really, you know, I adore some of the most amazing women in this film. They look gorgeous. But every single – they go to university campus and every woman is just, it's all about sex. They're not there for their mind. Even in the scenes where – they're, you know, in the lecture halls, all the women are just giving the professor these eyes of lustfulness and biting in an apple like she's about to have an orgasm. And this isn't just the main actress. This is every actress, you know. I mean, the opening scene of the main actress is her sort of hunched over this motorbike with her ass up in the air like she's really just about to get one.
So this is a total animation. There's no.
No. This is real life. The original cartoon was a cartoon.
It's not a 3D animation. Okay.
The characters are 3D, but in terms of the Transformers, but it's got live action figures. Yes. So live action actors.
So are the actors real human beings?
They are.
Oh, okay.
They are.
Okay, right. It's hard sometimes to clarify that because I know a lot of films mix, and it's even hard to know.
Yeah, well, you know, Megan Fox is the main actress. And we have an Australian actress in it by the name of Isabel Lucas, a former Home and Away star.
Right.
Now, there is literally, I mean, it is literally soft porn. If anyone's seen a Zoo magazine or a FHM, it is literally that.
Okay.
You know, it's total dumbing down of women. The only woman that wasn't sexually portrayed was the mother of the main actor, the hero. The mother of the hero, she wasn't sexually exploited, but she was extremely dumb. She was portrayed in this totally thick, ditzy, totally can't string a sentence together without being totally dumb, right? So the portraying of women in this film is so, and I'm no, you know, feminist extraordinaire or anything, but I find it quite offensive to the women of the world to be pumped this sort of disgusting filth. I mean, honestly, that's what I see it as, because any woman that hasn't done 15 hours of makeup and lighting and fake tan and fake hair and fake nails and fake teeth and fake tits is going to be sitting in the movie theater and really sort of doubting herself.
It's a strange twist, isn't it? It's maybe it's a new trend. Maybe they're just trying something on to see if it works.
Well, you know, it really... It's part of this sort of global order to make women really dumb and self-obsessed. And self-obsession breeds depression, really. I mean, let's face it, folks. Self-obsession breeds depression. That's just how
slogan.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah.
When people are self-obsessed, look at the most self-obsessed people in the world are usually stars like Britney Spears and stuff, and they're depressed to hell because all they think about is themselves, and everyone else thinks about them like they're gods, and they're just obsessed with themselves. They don't, you know, go out helping others. And so, you know, the best way to get away from depression is to help others. And it really, these sort of films portray women as this and guys as these sort of macho, ridiculous sort of, you know, guys that don't really... You know, they just want to go to war, and you know, and that's the other thing about this film is that the statist sort of portrayal, the statist aspects of this film are so extreme. Like, you know, the government's the best. I mean, it's typical of these blockbuster American films, and you know, I'm not shocked by it because it's pretty much all of them are like that. But
although I think I'd say that there are different themes. I mean, because I recently saw the film Echelon, The Echelon Conspiracy. Have you seen that one?
No.
Well, that belongs to the other genre of Hollywood films where the government is evil, which is also a very popular genre. You know, there's a long history of these types of films. I don't know. You know, I think the Bruce Willis film State of Siege from 10 years ago, the Enemy of the State, that one with Will Smith, a lot of these ones where there is a huge government conspiracy to control and bring about tyranny, which is often opposed by some heroic figure who fights against it and restores truth and justice. But there is also that other tendency of those films that seem to be just appealing to the most typical sort of stereotypes in our society, and yet you put them all together, all these films, and it just, they all become part of this circus of entertainment. It's all just pure entertainment.
Yeah. It is a lighthearted sort of thing, and I shouldn't really dig at it too much. But the other thing I found with Transformers is that they had all these cheesy jokes all the way through it. And I'm sitting there in the cinema, and the sad thing is, Harold, that most people in the cinema were laughing at some of these crappest jokes.
Really?
Really dumb humor. Like, I'm not saying just a bad joke. I'm saying really, really dumb humor. Some of the most dumb humor I've seen. And all these people were like, yeah, and then repeating the line, like, you know, of the joke, like, you know, and having this sort of laugh. And I'm just sitting there thinking, what has society come to? You know, I mean, amazing effects. Honestly, one of the most amazing effects films I've seen in years. So that is an upside. But, you know, I just found it kind of sad that we spend so much effort, blood, sweat, and tears. And coming from a special effects background, I really do know how much time and effort and sweat goes into making this film. I mean, it's extraordinary. It's not, you don't just click render. You know, it really is a lot of effort, and they've done an amazing job with the effects. But in terms of filmmaking as utilizing the people and these stereotypes, it's a little bit of a sad state of affairs.
Oh, thanks for that roundup, and we'll continue the film reviews. I'll be reviewing a film next week, and hopefully we'll be able to give our listeners a little bit of interest in that manner.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
Spooky segment for the show. I'm just testing out some of my spooky sounds here. Sorry, guys. Okay, we're back with the final segment. And look, I just want to actually, in this segment, give a quick roundup in relation to some of the material from last week. Because we discussed the tasering issue last week. But there were new developments that occurred virtually as soon as I finished the show. There was new information that came out. Now, what I need to point out is that in Queensland, there had been an incident, I think the week before, in which a man had been killed. And it has since been revealed that the man who was killed was tasered 28 times.
Yeah, before suffering a heart attack.
Yeah. That, you know, so, and the story has kind of gone underground again. I haven't, since this Ute gate took over the news here, but basically the tasering story has disappeared completely. And I don't think we'll see it again. I don't think we'll hear about it again unless some really huge thing happens again. And even then it'll tend to be suppressed. Because these stories only often come out when a combination of things occur. Like what happened last week was there was a news story about the release, about the new plan to bring in thousands of new weapons to police. There was simultaneously a court case from a man who'd been illegally tasered by the police in Oxford Street. And then there was the death of the man in Queensland. It was a perfect storm, you know. And so it pushed the story up. But what we'll see is that the story will drop down again, and we might not hear about it for another 6 months. And meanwhile, they'll finish the rollout of tasers, I guarantee you. All the police will be armed with them, and all of this terribly disquieting information that we've learned will be as if it's completely forgotten. But we will not forget. On this show, we will keep reminding you that it is an ongoing travesty of human rights.
And it is. In fact, there's a multi-ethnic grassroots coalition made up of families in the States who have been the recipients of taser discharges, and they formed this group for a call on a ban against the weapons, And the they also marched and released a whole heap of I think it was 291 black balloons, representing the number of people killed during a taser incident in North America alone. So that's 291 people dying of a taser incident.
And it's important to emphasize, when a person dies, that is the most extreme and severe end of the spectrum of the problem. But there is a vast number of people who don't die, but are severely hurt. I mean, you think about it. That number of people die, that's the worst thing that can happen to you. Okay, there's a much larger number of people who are being injured by them.
Absolutely.
And
we always forget about that, don't we? We sort of skip past that. But what does it do? What happens when you get millions of volts thrown through your body?
Yeah.
You know, what actually happens to your brain, to your nervous system, to your kidney, to your liver, to your heart? You know, what actually happens? You know?
So
it doesn't just go unaffected.
I'd really like it if we on this show could form some kind of a spearhead to try and bring together a national movement against the misuse of tasers. And I do emphasize misuse, because I'm not one who wants to call for banning of everything. I don't say sort of ban this, ban that, okay?
No, I just want to educate. You know, I'm
yeah.
You know, my way is if it's not good enough for me to use, why should the police use it?
Yeah, and
because the police are just another gang.
Yes, and if a policeman draws a taser on an unarmed suspect in a situation where there is no threat of violence, that should be. And again, I'm not one that I have great faith in the criminal system, but since we do have laws and we do have an accepted standards, there has to be some, I guess, measures against police doing that. Just as there are, a policeman is not allowed within his normal duties to draw his gun, and I've been told that by a policeman. I was told that years ago, that a policeman is not allowed, and if he does, it's a crime, and he can be punished. You know, he can lose his job or he can go to prison, because he's not allowed to draw his gun unless there's a felony in progress. Okay, and I don't see why it should be any different for tasers. I mean, if someone is about to kill themselves and it's the last thing you're going to do to stop that, or they're going to kill someone else, in some situations, I think. But even then, I think in the case of a suicide, I think that is actually a tough one, because you can if you just do that to someone who's about to commit suicide, you may so destroy whatever dignity they've got that they might end up killing themselves later anyway, or you know it might be worth doing. That is actually a tricky one, and I just think you should always.
I just don't think the state should have the authority to go around zapping millions of volts into people whether they're about to commit suicide or not.
As a compassionate society, we owe it to ourselves to try and deal with things in the most compassionate way.
That's where compassion shouldn't just be, you know, quick fix Western medicine style stuff. You know, compassion to someone that's got mental health issues starts with the whole of society, making society a better place. You know, making a bigger middle class, you know, so that people enjoy the fruits of society a bit more, instead of crushing them with new taxes and new antidepressants that will just, you know, make them numb and then take them off them. And then, yeah, I mean, there's just so much wrong in this society that it's hard, you know, you can't just go around tasering people to stop them committing suicide. I mean, that's where I stand on it.
And in one case, a man was shot with a taser because he was going to jump off a building. And, of course, he fell when he was shot and killed himself. That actually happened.
Okay. I mean, it's just, I'm sorry, yeah. but that's just, yeah.
that's just absolutely not absurd. It's just not on.
But yeah, look, yeah. If you think that police here in Australia are going to be any different than police in America, you're highly mistaken. You know, people are people, and they go on power trips, and usually the people that join police forces, you know, a lot of them are good cops, and they want to do it to help people, but a lot of them are good that just end up turning a bit nasty because they just deal with the scum of society every day. And they just think everyone's just scum, and they just have a bad day one day, pull over someone and just taser them in the neck because they've been speeding. Yeah. And to say to me, oh, that's ridiculous, that would never happen. Well, it happens every day in the States. And every day someone's tasered for some ridiculous reason. It's not just some one-off thing that happens once a month when you see it on the news. It happens all the time. Thousands of people a day.
And
tasered.
We could stop this. You see, we really are to blame if this goes ahead. We could stop it. And this is where you have this problem of if the society doesn't stand up and maintain vigilance against tyranny, tyranny will take over. And you can't just rely on the belief you have that we live in a democracy, therefore someone will protect your rights. It's you who have to protect your rights. That's what a democracy is. If you think it's a democracy, then understand that it's not somebody else's job to defend your rights. It's your job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You nailed it so hard on the head there, Mr. Yeah. Fenton.
Thank you.
You know, you have this thing called democracy, which you may believe so wholeheartedly, and it is a protection of nothing. It is not a protection of your freedoms. And when all the police have tasers, I can tell you right now it's going to be a hell of a lot harder to get them repealed.
Yeah.
It's going to be a hell of a lot harder to take them away. And that's why you really need to stop it happening now. And like I said before, to really nail it into people, our listeners' heads, to go out, and I know our listeners already know this, but to give you some perspectives to go and tell your friends, it really seriously isn't when you see the clip of "Don't tase me, bro" on TV and some grandma getting tased. That's not the only times it happens. It literally happens thousands of times a day in the States where people get tasered.
I think we need to. Here's a suggestion. I think we need to organise street theatre, where we do demonstrations of people being tased. We can just do them with toy guns, and we can actually do it as street theatre. One person can play the policeman. One person can play the victim, and we can do it in shopping malls or public spaces.
Yeah, and record it on your video cameras, folks.
Yeah,
on your video cameras and upload it.
Here's a suggestion for a national campaign, a taser awareness campaign.
Yeah.
So people understand what it is.
Because it's literally the taking away of general liberties. It's taking away the ability for the policeman to talk through confrontations. It lessens the skill sets of the police to deal with situations with a non-violent action. Instead, they are taught to then just pull out the taser and shoot them in the neck or in the back or wherever and bring them to the ground with an excruciating amount of electricity, which is doing all sorts of damage to organs and brain tissue and whatever else. Really get in there and do these little street theatres. Great idea, Harold.
Yeah, look, as we draw to a close tonight, one last thing, the shocking of the children, we have not forgotten, and it's on my mind. We had some excellent feedback from Stuart last week on that.
Yeah.
And we want to keep up on that topic as well.
Next week, folks, we're going to try and get Ashworth Palace in from... Panacea Bokaf, that's the open source energy movement, all sorts of new developments. fantastic open source energy, free energy coming our way, so that's good.
It is good indeed. And on that note, it's been a fantastic hour and a half.
Yeah, remember to leave comments, folks.
Remember to leave comments, and good night.